Hello, welcome from Joint Ventures coverage from EULA 2026 in London. And today I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Dybul from Manchester. And how have you been enjoying the conference so far?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's been a really exciting conference. I think that when you come to these meetings, it can be pretty inspiring. I think as an early career researcher, it's great to see what else is happening in the field and take forward kind of collaborations with other people. Right. So it's great to be in London.
Has there been any standout session for you that you want to highlight?
I went to a really interesting session actually on the first day on AI and how it's evolving in medical publishing. So it's a session by ARD and they were talking about kind of paper mills, revolutionary changes in AI, how our profession's changing, both in terms of the research we're doing, but also publishing and kind of how to work better with it. And that was a really great session actually. So recommend catching it.
Great.
On the catch-up.
I didn't go to that, so I'll probably work on demand on that. Could you tell us about work, what you do and what you have brought here to the conference, what you presented?
So I'm an academic clinical lecturer in Manchester. My research is predominantly in lupus, thinking about health inequalities and structural barriers to equitable outcomes. The work that I'm doing at the moment is on a healthcare database called the Greater Manchester Care Record. So this is a city region in the northwest of England, in the UK. I haven't had to travel too far to get here. And this is 2.7 million people across the region. We're a kind of a socioeconomically diverse region within the UK. So there is a high level of deprivation, but also a lot of people from more diverse ethnic backgrounds. So within this cohort, I specifically looked at lupus patients. So about 2,500 lupus patients within our city region. And I'm really interested in the inequities and outcomes based on people's socioeconomic background and ethnicity. So my poster, which is on the poster tool this afternoon, shows that in our 2,500 patients, about a third of patients are from a diverse ethnic background. These patients have higher levels of comorbidities, and there's also inequitable steroid use. So we showed that people of Black, mixed, and Asian ethnic background disproportionately get higher levels of steroids, and this is present in a kind of an adjusted regression model. And actually, when you look at the interaction between ethnicity and deprivation, this isn't linear. And actually, within our results, we showed that people of certain ethnic backgrounds will get more steroids depending on how socioeconomically deprived they are. So it's about kind of what are the structural barriers then that we can address as clinicians and researchers in order to try and get better equity of care for our patients.
And what's in your opinion are the main factors? What are driving this inequality in the care?
I think it's so complex and so multifactorial, and I think it would be like a lecture in and of itself to kind of think about what those are. But I think what's really important to me is what can be changed in terms of trying to address that. And I think there are a lot of biases that we have as physicians in terms of when we're prescribing to patients, what is changing our attitudes in terms of our steroids, what's driving that. When we come to conferences, I think we hear a lot about definitions of remission, and often these include steroids, and we all kind of talk a lot about how steroid therapies need to be minimized. But within our in the Greater Manchester Care Record, we found that about 20% of patients are on long-term steroids. So actually, I think it's about what implementation measures can we actually practice to change some of these barriers, and actually how do we create equity within our own care? So I think it's so difficult to answer that question, but I think it's focusing on some of the things that we can address first is the next steps.
Yeah. And what is kind of your ideas for your next steps in research, where you want to focus on?
Yeah, so I think this is population level data, which is really, I think for me, really important. I also work in registry data, which is kind of based on patients with severe disease in hospital. This then gives us a snapshot of what's happening at a population level. Yeah. But I think now we need to drill down and actually interview people on the ground. So our AHPs, clinicians, patients, about what these barriers are so that we can create and implement models to actually drive forward some of these changes.
Yeah. It sounds great. It's a very important work. And I always feel that in ethnically diverse communities, their access to healthcare and outcomes are different. So it's important to identify factors what drives that. And like you said, what can we do about that and be conscious about it?
I think so. And I think, so in the UK, we have the NHS, our National Health Service. Mm. So in some ways, there is equity of access to care in some respects, but then actually even within these systems, we can see these structural barriers exist. So as you say, I think it's a really interesting place to study and try and make changes for our patients.
Great. I highly recommend to check Sarah's work and the posters. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm now joined by Dr. Kate Harden, who works in Leeds. Welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Have you enjoyed the conference so far?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. This is my third EULAR conference I've been to now, and it's always great to see rheumatologists from different areas of the world come together and hear all the exciting new research that's been going on. I've enjoyed it, yes.
It's perfect. It's a very, very concentrated place to meet people, hear the latest things. In a short space. I know you have brought some work here. You're presenting. You have a poster. Do you mind telling us what your research is on and what you're presenting here this year in EULAR?
Yes, of course. So my research is on immune checkpoint inhibitor induced arthritis and arthralgia. So in Leeds, over the last 5 years, we've developed a cohort of over 200 patients with arthralgia or arthritis following immune checkpoint inhibitors, which are increasingly used to treat cancer now. But they cause a lot of immune-related adverse events as a side effect. And inflammatory arthritis is very common. But actually, arthralgia without obvious swelling is maybe up to 6 times more common. And our cohort is fairly unique in that we include the arthralgia patients as well, so not just the ones with overt obvious inflammatory arthritis. So my research is on looking at the outcomes in these patients. So if you want me to go in more detail.
Yeah, that'd be great. I see quite a lot of people who have been referred with quite bad joint pains, and I always struggle to know whether I should intervene now, how these things will progress or not progress. So it'll be good to hear what kind of your findings are.
Yeah, so it is a really complicated area because obviously any treatment we give these patients in terms of immunosuppression will theoretically do the opposite of what the immune checkpoint inhibitor is doing for their cancer. So it is a really difficult balance in treating these patients. Specifically, my poster tour in EULAR has been on looking at long-term arthritis outcomes in these patients, specifically whether we can predict their requirement for needing a DMARD to treat the disease, and also whether they are going to have persistent symptoms. So early research has suggested that around 50% of patients with inflammatory arthritis have persistent symptoms despite stopping the immunotherapy. Which is slightly different than the majority of the other organ toxicities, which tend to go away after the immune checkpoint inhibitor stops. But for the arthritis, for some reason that we're not really sure why, seems to persist more. Yeah. So my research has been whether we can predict that and whether it also persists in patients with arthralgia as well. We kind of took all our patients that had been in our study for at least 6 months and invited them all back for a final follow-up visit where we assessed whether they had persistent symptoms and whether they had needed a DMARD or we weren't able to taper their steroids to below 10 milligrams of prednisolone or equivalent, because that's the sort of level we would then consider starting a DMARD. And then we were able to develop two multivariable predictor models to predict disease persistence in these patients. Our median follow-up time was about 16 months, And we found that in keeping with the literature, around 57% of patients had persistent symptoms. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the patients with arthralgia had the same levels of persistence flares of inflammatory arthritis, which is important because there might be up to six times more of these patients. And it's really is quite a growing burden in the rheumatology services. And we were able to find certain factors that both predicted disease persistence and the need for DMARDs. Okay. So they were having an elevated CRP, having tenosynovitis on imaging. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of imaging in these patients in Leeds. And then also having a specific peripheral inflammatory arthritis MRI pattern on imaging, which is a similar pattern to what we see in rheumatoid arthritis. Yeah. So these are the factors that seem to be associated with both DMARD requirement and persistence of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what the work I presented.
Okay. And is there a difference if the checkpoint inhibitor is stopped or continued? And your cohort or patients, do you have numbers, how many patients continued or stopped? And does that change the outcome or influences that?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So previous studies, when they have looked at this, there's only one kind of other study that's looked at the persistence rates in terms of multivariable analysis, and they only included inflammatory arthritis, and they only included patients that had stopped the immunotherapy. So they found that 50% persisted despite stopping immunotherapy. For us, we included all patients regardless of whether they had stopped the immunotherapy or not, but we did factor into our model whether they were on immunotherapy at baseline or had stopped it within 3 months of baseline. And we actually, interestingly, did not find that was significantly associated with the rates of persistence. Okay. So we both had patients that both resolved whilst their arthritis symptoms resolved while still on immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then we also had patients that persisted whilst they'd stopped immunotherapy a long time ago. So in our model, it didn't seem to make a difference. Yeah. And actually, there are other smaller studies that have also reported that in some patients, arthritis does go away despite stopping immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting finding. Yeah.
Because practically, it's always one of the main questions is discussion between treating oncology teams or is it whether to continue checkpoint inhibitors or not, and depending whether that will change the outcome of her disease.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, interesting to hear the results of that. What are your focuses on your future work? What you're going to focus next within this area?
Yeah, so we want to develop these multivariable models further, looking specifically at if there's any certain biomarkers that we can add into these models to improve their accuracy.
Yeah.
We're also keen to collaborate with other centres to try and see if we can use these models and see if they reflect in other different centres. Mm. We want to see if we can build bigger collaborations as well.
It's great. I think this is quite evidence-free zone, and we increasingly see these presentations. I think to see very useful work what will help in practice in day-to-day rheumatology clinics. Thank you for joining us. And I strongly recommend everyone to check Kate's work and her poster today presenting in UR.
Thank you very much.